welcome to another episode of People Seek Meeple.
Hello, I am Will.
And I'm Shalene.
And everyone's so excited for us to be here.
Because we're the board game problem solvers. We're here to solve your board game problems.
Send us some questions, we'll answer them, you'll feel enlightened.
I thought it might be kind of fun to start this episode with a little brag. So we're going to introduce our gaming triumph of the week.
I was sorry, I didn't realize you were going for a thing there. This brand new and exciting segment, Gaming Triumph of the Week, is, shockingly, about the time that we played a game this week, and it worked out really well for us.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we could do with some positivity in our lives.
Yeah, the moment of triumph could be big or small, significant to many or just to you. And if you have your own board game triumph of the week that you'd like to send us, please feel free. We'd love to hear/read them.
Great. What was your gaming triumph of the week?
My triumph this week was actually in a game of D&D, I mean Dungeons & Dragons. Our Dungeon Master has this rule where if you get a 20 on investigation, you get to pull a card from this item deck that he's created. And he's very excited about it, and he's been waiting forever and ever and ever for somebody to draw one of his two rare cards from the deck, and I did.
On the first try, no less.
On the first try, and it's this wicked cool pair of boots that turn water to ice so I can walk on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Kick water elementals.
Yeah, yeah, it's going to be really fun to fight an elemental, I think.
Nice.
Yeah.
I have a gaming triumph in which I wasn't so much a winner of things, but I was teaching some people how to play this amazing little game that we've talked about before called Snake Oil, and each and every single one of them had 3 points, and they were like, this next one is going to be the tiebreaker, and so they waved me down and was like, okay, you need to listen to all of our pitches so that you can decide who is the best. And,
oh, that's so good.
Yeah, and the winner was someone that was selling me an ocean of socks because I was Santa, and everyone loves socks. And if you don't have to dedicate all of that time and all of those resources into making socks, you've got a lot of time to make other things.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Cool.
Yeah. Moving right along. If you need recommendations, or just want to see if we can actually come up with a game for your very detailed and wild scenario, you can send your questions to peopleseekmeeple@gmail.com or find us on Reddit at r/peopleseekmeeple. The more parameters you give us, the more fitting your recommendation will be. If you have a deadline, please make sure to put it in the subject line. If we don't get it in time on the podcast, we will put our recommendations in our reply. Shall we answer some gosh darn questions? Question one. Coming to us from Backspace 8908. Probably not their name in real life, just their name on Reddit. Got a tough one. Looking for a game for a friend of a friend. They have a small family, two parents, and two kids. Kids are 5 and 12. I don't know how much they know about board games, and we're looking for a game that can play the four of them. Co-op would be nice, but not required. Thanks. Now, neither of the games that we came up with this time around are in fact cooperative.
But they are fun and cool and great.
And easy enough to pick up for the wee ones.
Yes. So my recommendation for you is Deep Sea Adventure, designed by Jun Sasaki and Goro Sasaki and published by Baborka Games. This is a push-your-luck style adventure game wherein you are all divers sharing the same tank of oxygen, and you dive down and you don't start losing oxygen until you start picking up treasure. You move via dice rolls and you lose movement based on how many treasures you have. So it gets harder and harder to move the more treasures and the deeper under the water you go. There's a cool thing where you can jump over spaces that have other players on them. So usually like right at the beginning, it's really easy to get down pretty far if you don't go first. And then getting back up, if you go down really deeply, can be tricky because everyone else is already gone.
You're in for a world of pain.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, but don't worry, if you don't make it back to the surface, there's two more rounds to be played, and your treasures just gently float down to the ocean floor in a nice little pile, and you can pick them up three at a time later on.
This will work for the younger ones because the agency is there, but the options aren't overwhelming. You can either just keep on going, or you can turn around and start running off. You can pick up the treasure that you walk onto, or you can choose to leave it and try and get the better stuff.
Easy decisions. High octane fun.
Next up, we have a very smooth, very easy to play, very fun little game called Marrakesh, designed by Dominic Erhard and published by Fundex. This is a game about walking around on a map, controlling a little man with an adorable mustache, and throwing down rugs left, right, and center. Gameplay-wise, it's pretty straightforward. You each control the same little dude who moves around on this map. If you run into a wall, you just kind of turn around. You can either make it so the little mustachioed man walks straight ahead, or you can turn to the left, or you can turn to the right. You roll the die, you move that many spaces, and then you take one of your super exciting rugs, and you put it down in a way that is adjacent to our friend. The rugs are 2x1, the board goes in a square grid. It's all pretty straightforward, easy to pick up stuff. But if the little mustachioed man lands on someone's rug, they have to pay the owner of the rug equal to the total area that it covers. So you want to try and cover as much space as you can, but you can also put your rugs on top of other people's rugs, and so it makes for this exciting little kind of territory control thing with a little bit of take that, but you can't just target one person all the time because you don't control all of the movements of the little friend. It's very aesthetically gorgeous, and the three-dimensional aspect of the rugs, they start to like pile up higher and higher and higher and higher as the game goes on.
Yeah, the rugs are real rugs. They're so cute.
Yeah. So those are our two recommendations for you, Backspace 8908, if that is your real name.
Yeah, I particularly like Marrakesh because it's like easy to learn, hard to master, mm-hmm. one of those. So the younger ones will get a lot out of playing it, and the older ones will get a lot out of trying to best the other older ones, I think.
So that's Deep Sea Adventure and Marrakesh.
Question 2 comes to us from Bro Seppi. Thinking about getting a new game or two sometime soon, maybe a Christmas present? Wondering what you guys think my collection could use. I get the most use out of games that work well with 2 or 3 players because I don't often have larger groups together. Enjoy all sorts of games though, from family games I can play with my 8-year-old to more advanced that you'd probably play with adults. Heavy time commitment games such as Gloomhaven probably wouldn't get much use right now. And then Broseppi has provided a list of games that they already have, and we have chosen games that we think fit nicely into that collection.
Oh, sorry, am I going first?
I can go.
I didn't know who was going first.
That's
we probably
okay.
should have established that.
Shall I go?
Would you like to go?
Doesn't matter. the digital age. This would be costing us dollars a minute.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Okay, my so recommendation for you, since I noticed you don't have a dexterity game on your shelf, is Junk Art, designed by Jay Cormier and Seb Fung Lim, published by Hobby Japan. Junk Art is a wonderful stacking game where the pieces are all different shapes and colors, and the cards dictate what you are going to put onto your pile. Sometimes you get to decide based on the cards in your hand, and sometimes other people pass you the cards with the pieces you're going to play next. Sometimes you have to switch which pile you're working on in the middle of a round. So if Will's got this really precarious thing going on and then plays a switcheroo, I'm going to have to come and take over his pile. And he's grinning evilly because he's just made it very difficult for me to put the next piece on.
I would never do something like that, listeners.
He frequently does things like that. The replayability is high, and I think that the 8-year-old will get a kick out of it, but also your adult friends will probably enjoy it too as a warm-up game.
Yeah, you basically play a bunch of mini-games with the components that have been provided to you, and the better you do in these games, you get like a high, like overarching score that you will eventually win, but you can scrap all of that if you want to and just kind of play all the fun little tiny games, and you'll end up having a really good time as well.
What's your recommendation?
Oh, me? I recommend an exciting game of mystery and deduction called Cryptid, designed by Hal Duncan and Ruth Viviers, published by Osprey Games, and it is a delightful little game of monster hunting, basically. Everyone has a little book in their hands, and there is a board, because that is generally how board games work. Not all board games, but some board games. It's like a modular board that has all kinds of different terrain with like a couple other things as well, and you're all trying to find a mysterious cryptid, be it some kind of wolfman or Loch Ness monster. It never really says what it is. It's just a mysterious creature. You all have one very specific clue that tells you where the cryptid is, or the area in which the cryptid might possibly be.
Or might not be.
Or might not be in the more advanced game. You are basically putting cubes on the board to say where the cryptid is definitely not. And everyone has a different clue, and if you find the one spot that aligns with everyone's clue, then you win the game. To kick off with, you're just chucking cubes down, and then people will start asking you questions and being like, hey, so for you, would the cryptid be there, and if you have to say yes, and that's given you, but also everyone else, a fairly huge clue. It is a wonderful, wonderful little game that just, like, works a part of the brain that doesn't really get worked that often. That kind of logic, like, if this is the case, then this isn't the case, and then if this means this, then obviously this is this, and this is this. It's super satisfying to play. That is Junk Art and Cryptid.
Now it's time for what we played today, wherein we talk about what we played today.
Or as Shalene would put it, what we play today.
Champions of Midgard.
Thanks, Ole Steinus and Grey Fox Games, for bringing us this lovely little worker placement dice chucky type thing.
Little?
I mean, it is big.
You're Vikings fighting monsters. How much bigger does it get?
You're fighting trolls, you're fighting draugrs, you're fighting all kinds of scary mythical monsters. It's a pretty well-made game.
Yeah, I think there are some superfluous elements to the game. For example, the extra goal cards that you could get. I think there was another thing that space did. It gave you something else.
Yeah,
oh, you got to look at some of the dangers ahead if you went adventuring. But I didn't even come close to accomplishing the one goal I had. I know that wasn't the case for everybody, but I'm not sure how many extra goal cards a person needs.
And your character was all based off of, like, getting extra goal cards.
Yeah, I did bad at that.
I mean, I don't think it's your fault. But anyway, it's an exciting little game. It's not little. It's an exciting game where you are placing down workers to get resources, but for the most part, the resources are dudes that fight monsters. And when you go to fight the monsters, the dudes are dice, and you throw those dice at the monsters, and they will do a certain amount of damage to you, unless you roll a certain number of shields, and then you do a certain number of damage to them, unless you don't roll any freaking swords or spears or axes, which definitely happened to me a couple of times.
Oh yeah, I'm good at that too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and that gets you glory and resources, and that's the general gist.
Yeah, the
really.
Goal is to be the most glorious Viking.
It's pretty straightforward.
Don't try to fight the big monsters before you fight some little ones, is my little nugget of wisdom for you. I tried to do that. I actually came really close. Well, I say really close. What I mean is, I did a good job getting to the monster, but then I rolled four blanks when I got to the monster.
I mean, if you're good at rolling dice, then just go for it. It is a game that I enjoyed. If someone came over and was like, I have this game, Champions of Midgard, do you want to play it with me? Then I would say yes. I don't think I'll buy it because I can see myself playing it maybe two or three more times and then that being enough.
There's just so many other games.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, One Deck Dungeon.
That is a game that I quite thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
One Deck Dungeon, designed by Chris Sieslisk and published by Asmodee Games, is a really nifty little 1-2 player cooperative dungeon crawly thing that is kind of minimalistic, I guess. It has a small box and a deck of cards and a bunch of character sheet type thingies and a few tokens and that's it, really. But what is also there is a really cleverly designed, deceptively difficult game.
It's a bit of a puzzle game. The skills that you have give you dice that you can roll to fight off creatures and traps, and when you beat a creature or a trap, you get to add it to your character as a skill or an item, or put it under your level up deck as experience. The cards are really well designed. I really love how many ways you can use them.
And another thing about the design, and what was probably the first thing that I noticed about this game, was that on the box art and throughout the entire game, all of the characters that you can play as are female.
What?
Yeah, which is, number one, very exciting. And number two, they are all dressed so practically. I love it so much. There's no
unnecessary cleavage.
Yeah, or just like armor that is just covering boobs and butt. It's so refreshing.
It is really nice. They're just people.
Yeah, they're dressed like they don't want to get eaten by monsters.
Yeah.
Which is, like, depressingly refreshing.
Yeah.
And
so, mad props to Chris and his team.
Good job. 10 out of 10. Highly recommend. I really, really enjoyed One Deck Dungeon and want to play it again probably after recording this podcast.
Maybe. Yeah. There's a way that you can play in campaign mode so that you can sort of build your character up as if you were playing D&D. You can unlock certain things that you get to use for each subsequent game that you play. And there are 5 different monsters that you can try to beat, and they get really hard really fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first one is already really hard. It's really cool. Let's go play that.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Haha, just kidding. We have to finish the rest of the podcast first. So we're going to perhaps answer another question.
This is a good joke. We got you good.
Yeah, I bet you weren't looking at the time and being like, oh, there's still like 10 minutes left in this podcast.
If you were, that means you're good at logic puzzles and you should try cryptid.
Yes, there we go. Question 3 is by Skarzai. After a painfully long game of Munchkin last night, I'm so sorry, I've decided to buy a new board game or two to play with my friends. I'm not super knowledgeable on board games, so any suggestions would be amazing. I'm looking for something that's good for 3 to 5 players. They have Avalon and Town of Salem for larger groups, preferably something that isn't super hard to learn, but still deep with lots of replayability. I have Ticket to Ride, which is a great game, but I find I've played it enough that it feels a bit repetitive and boring and want to try something to mix it up. With that in mind, what games would you suggest?
I picked up on a sort of fantasy theme that you've got going on, so I thought you might enjoy Tales of the Arabian Nights by Anthony J. Galela and 3 of his, I'm going to say, friends, and published by Z-Man Games Incorporated. Tales of the Arabian Nights isn't necessarily a game you play to win, because the journey is so much fun.
It's essentially a sandbox game.
Yeah.
Where you kind of build up a character and go on these ridiculous adventures and make really bad decisions because it's hilarious.
You get statuses over the course of the game, and some are good and some are bad. You have encounters with hags and djinn, genies, and wizards and thieves and all kinds of different things. One of the really cool things about it, because it's a storytelling game, is that it comes with this huge, basically choose your own adventure book.
Mm-hmm.
So you move on your turn based on the wealth that you have. And at each place that you stop, you're going to encounter something. So you draw from the deck and you see that, oh, I'm going to encounter this wizard. And then you consult a matrix sheet to figure out what kind of wizard it is. So you might be encountering an angry wizard. And then you consult a book. And then you look at this list of things that will tell you what your options are on how to interact with this wizard. So you might attack the wizard, or you might
aid the wizard,
or you might honor the wizard,
or grovel to the wizard.
And based on what you choose there, you get a number that will lead you to the story in the really big book of stories. And lots of unpredictable things happen. You never really get what you think you're going to get out of pleading to this angry wizard, but it's so funny.
And it's like everyone's involved. I think every turn you want to know what happens to your friends, because there's like up to like at least around 3,000 different things that can happen in this book. If you play it lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots, then you're gonna start getting the same stuff. But we still get the same stuff, and it's still funny.
Well, it's applied in a different way each time.
Yeah.
Like, your character develops in a different way each time. There are skills that you can earn, like you can be good at magic, or courtly graces, or
seduction.
Yeah, you could be beguiling. So it's never really the same twice. Plus, the statuses that you get can really inhibit your gameplay or help it.
That's
I always
true.
End up married.
Yeah, you do, don't you?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Well, I would like to recommend to you a nifty little worker placement game called Lords of Waterdeep. It's kind of like a good first step into worker placement, and also kind of adheres to that fantasy setting. It is under the Dungeons & Dragons umbrella, in which you are some variety of lord that is putting together parties of adventurers to complete quests. And these adventurers are represented by different colored cubes, and you want to get the cubes, you want to throw the cubes at the goals and get a bunch of money and points for doing so. It's really easy to pick up. You can normally teach the game in around 10 to 15 minutes, and then once you're ready to go, it's just kabam. There's no tricky little extra rules that people are going to be like, oh, well, you didn't tell me that or that or that. I think it's just a really solid, well-made worker placement game that you can get a lot of replay out of. And once you think you've played it enough, there are like a couple of really good expansions as well that add some more stuff. It's just a good investment, I think.
One of my favorite things is you can build a building, and other people can use the building, and you get cool things when other people use your building.
Yeah, you can basically just be the property baron of Waterdeep.
So that's Lords of Waterdeep and Tales of the Arabian Nights. Enjoy your new games! And now it's time for our very obscurely named new segment called Games You Might Not Have Played.
Where we talk about games that you might not have played. We have one stipulation for this, and that is that it cannot be in the Board Game Geek Top 1000. So we have scoured our brains, and also Board Game Geek, to find games that we have played and have really enjoyed that we think that you might also enjoy.
Yeah, these games deserve more attention and playtime.
That's true. So I'm going to kick us off with a game called Revolution, which is essentially a bidding game designed by Philip DuBarry and published by Steve Jackson Games. And, oh, Steve Jackson, you hear me say. My goodness, isn't that the company that has brought forward such spectacular games like Munchkin and Zombie Dice and Cthulhu Dice? Well, yes. Yes, they have. And those games might not have the greatest reputation amongst hobby gamers, but this game itself, I think, is in a little class of its own. It's essentially a territory control game where you are bidding for various areas, but you're all bidding in secret and revealing all at the same time. There are three kinds of currency. There's force, there's blackmail. I was going to say black currents. There's force. There's blackmail and there's gold, and force beats any amount of blackmail and any amount of gold, and blackmail beats any amount of gold, and gold only beats less gold, really. You want to try and put as many of your cubes onto the board as possible, but there are also some other things that you can bid on, like removing other people's cubes and replacing it with your own, swapping around multiple cubes, or just bidding on getting more good stuff like gold and force and blackmail and stuff like that. One thing that I really love about this game is that if two people bid the same amount for something, you lose all of that resource and no one gets anything, which just makes for some fantastic moments when you might strategically just put one gold on something because you think someone else is just going to put one gold on that something as well. But then they put two gold on and they get the thing and you've just wasted a gold. I really, really like this game, and I think that everyone should at least give it a go because it's easy to learn and a lot of fun to play. And that is Revolution. Ding dong.
My pick for this is Fearsome Floors by Friedman Fries, published by 2F Spiel. Friedman Fries, while it's true that he brought us Power Grid, is also capable of quirk and whimsy. This game, Fearsome Floors, is a racing game where you have to get out of the dungeon not only before your fellow racers, but also before the dungeon just caves in entirely. But you are being chased by a monster. And the really cool thing is that you can build your own monster. It comes with a bunch of pieces, and you kind of put together whatever monster you want. It's really fun. Each player has two tokens who can move around the board. I think you only need to get one of them out. It's been a while since I've played. Another cool thing is that after your token moves, you flip it over, so on the next round, it's going to have a different amount of movement. You can try to lure the monster towards other players. You can squish other players between a boulder and the wall. You can trick the monster into teleporting to the other side of the board so it's closer to an opponent. It's kind of like a really fun, wacky little game, and I highly recommend it.
So that's Revolution and Fearsome Floors. I think this might be it. This might be the end of this podcast. Specifically this episode. The podcast is still going to be going.
Yeah, barring something drastic.
That's true. Yeah, we can't promise that nothing drastic won't happen.
But if nothing drastic happens, we're going to be back in your podcast feed in 2 weeks' time.
All right, that's it. That's the end of the podcast.
Thank you to Counterculture in Wellington for letting us record here.
Yeah, thanks so much. We look at all of your games, and it helps us figure out what to recommend sometimes.
I mean, our board game shelf is pretty great, too. No, it's not. Sorry, empty right now. That was wishful thinking. If I put it out into the universe, then someday it will be really great again.
That's true.
Yeah.
Send us all your board games.
Oh.
There we go.
Is that a thing we can ask for?
I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen, but, no. You know, if we put it out there.
No. All right. Well, happy merry times and peace upon your gaming tables.
See ya.
Bye.